Welcome to Supernatural Stocks on MoneyWeb with your host, The Finance Ghost. This is your weekly fix of equity analysis designed for stock pickers. Whether local or international, you can expect a mix of news and my ideas about what I'm seeing in the markets. If you use the excellent MoneyWeb tools and look at the Spur share price, then you will see that the total return over 3 years is 112%. That is a monumental outcome, particularly in the context of South Africa's growth over that period. The world is very worried right now about the birth rate, but that does not seem to be affecting Spur's numbers. This is more than just a play park that also offers decent burgers and excellent waffles. The waffles really are great. You see, the last time I went to Milky Lane, it was pretty awful compared to Spur. And Milky Lane, of course, is part of famous brands, so perhaps the waffles are an indication of the broader story. Because over 3 years, your total return in famous brands is just 2.4%. I'm going to say that again, 112% versus 2.4%. I feel compelled to include the decimal place in the famous brands number because 40 basis points is sadly a material number in that context. In the latest interim period, Spur grew comparable profit before tax by 11.7%. Now, this is where they split out a number of important once-offs, as well as costs related to their corporate actions. It's probably the purest view on profits, and what a view it is. Growing profits in a consumer business in South Africa at roughly 4 times the inflation rate, that is a serious achievement. With headline earnings per share for the interim period of 204 cents, it's tempting to annualize it and work out the forward PE that way. There's seasonality in these numbers though, so be careful. The best thing to do is use the trailing 12 months. This puts Spur on a price earnings multiple of 11.2, not the most demanding valuation for this growth story. The dividend, interim that is, was 120 cents, but they do tend to pay a much larger final dividend versus the interim dividend. Spur's dividend yield at the moment, 7.7%. That means it's better than what you can probably get from a bank right now, and this business has no shortage of growth as well. Spur has clearly done a lot of things right. As we take a little break on supernatural stocks from AI and focus on some ribs and wings instead, what insights can we glean from these latest interim results? The first insight is that it's really about the pizza actually, not the ribs and wings. We need to talk about Panarottis, which went through a market repositioning in 2022. In the interim period, 7 new Panarottis opened and 2 closed, so that's 5 net new stores to take them to a total of 97 restaurants. That is a 5.4% increase in the footprint. That's higher than 1.5% in Spur over the same period and similar to the 5.7% in Rocco Mamas. Now, within the broader Spur group, Doppio Zero had a faster growth rate in the footprint than Panarottis, up 9.7% on a base of 31 stores. Doppio Zero's turnover growth of 14.9% is also impressive, although this was skewed by 2 Pizzavino conversions to Doppio Zero. Still, the people clearly do want Italian. It really is about the pizza. And we can especially see that in Panarottis, where turnover growth was an impressive 17.4%. That is by far the fastest growth rate in the group. For context, Spur grew 7.2%, Rocco Mamas was up 4.9%, and the excellent Hussar Grill, that was up 8%. Now, aside from significant improvements to how the Panarottis restaurants look, there's also the strategy to execute smaller formats in towns in South Africa that wouldn't necessarily offer enough footfall for the traditional formats to work. This is taking the brand to customers who would otherwise be buying elsewhere, and they've been doing a good job of this. Interestingly, Spur makes less of a son and dance in their interim presentation about the value offerings at Panarottis, certainly versus how they did it in their last full year results, although it's clear that the brand is resonating strongly with consumers. I mean, just look at that turnover growth. In the previous financial year, for example, they disclosed that the Panarottis Monsterito was over 20% of pizza sales. Go to the restaurants, order a massive pizza to share, buy your drinks and have fun with friends. That's the business model and it can't be replicated easily by takeaway, especially as people live in smaller properties over time that have less space for entertaining. These trends are in Spur's favor. So is it really about the pizza or is it about a combination of better store formats and shareable value offerings? Perhaps it's all of the above. No matter how well you execute, if you build something that consumers don't want, you'll still fail. So I do think the popularity of pizza is playing a role here. The second insight is that there is always an ugly duckling. The restaurant game is fickle, which is why restaurant groups tend to build diversified portfolios. The name of the listed company might be Spur Corporation, but only 47% of their footprint these days is under the Spur brand. Diversifying tends to be sensible in this space. The perfect example of how things can unfortunately go wrong is John Dory's, a business that represents 6% of the group's restaurant footprint. It's been around a long time, so it's not some weird and risky startup, but things are just going from bad to worse. In FY25, revenue was down 5.2% and there was a decrease in the net number of outlets. In the interim period, it was even worse. Turnover fell 11.7% and they decreased the outlets again, including conversions to other formats like Panarottis, and that's when you know it's going badly. This is despite a new look for the business that was introduced in 2024. It just shows that not every rebrand or brand evolution is going to be successful. Things are going really well at Spur, for example, which has been through an incredible modernization. But at John Dory's, they just aren't getting it right. Restaurants are tough, and having your finger in a few different pies is advisable, as evidenced by the fact that John Dory's is just not working. The third insight is that emerging market experts do best in emerging markets. Sounds obvious, right? But it's true. If you're going to have your finger in many pies, as I've suggested, then I would prefer it if those pies were in markets you actually understand. Aside from the focus on sit-down restaurants versus the takeaway formats that you'll find at famous brands, one of the other major differences between the two groups is the international expansion strategy, and that's been a success factor for Spur versus famous brands. It may surprise you to learn that Spur has 113 international restaurants as part of the total footprint of 753 restaurants. But instead of trying to compete in Europe, 112 out of 113 restaurants are in Africa. There's just one in Australia for whatever reason. And this shows you that they've stuck to their knitting in terms of building an emerging markets restaurant business. We have countless examples on the JSE of management teams who have tried to take emerging market business cultures and then go off and win in developed markets. But they don't win. It doesn't work. Famous Brands is one of the worst examples. And anyway, why would you want to be in Europe right now? Emerging markets are the real growth story in terms of population growth and improving affordability among consumers over time. If you're in the consumer game, like Spur, you want to be in places like Africa over the long term. Insight number four is a short and sweet one, and it is that Gauteng remains the biggest economic engine. Cape Town gets plenty of attention in the market and capital is flowing into the province at an incredible rate, but when it comes to consumer businesses, Gauteng is still the underpin of the country's economy. Spur is proof of this, with 58% of restaurant turnover being in Gauteng. With a growth rate of 9% in that province, there is also plenty of opportunity there. Next up is the Western Cape, contributing 21% to turnover, with growth of 7.4%. Interestingly, that Western Cape growth rate has actually slowed down versus the previous financial year, while Gauteng has remained remarkably consistent. Insight number five is that consumers still want experiences. Spur's business does not include any quick service restaurants like a McDonald's or a Steers. At Spur, they want you to sit down and enjoy the table service rather than order from a counter. And in delivering this model, they have brands that appeal to middle-income and higher-income consumers. Having thoroughly enjoyed a dinner at Hussar Grill recently, I can confirm that they are doing a great job of executing these different experiences. And experiences is the word. This is the strategic underpin of the entire group. The core of Spur's business is in offering in-person experiences to customers. In my opinion, this is a much better model than being takeaway focused and being up against a million other names on Uber Eats and the other delivery apps. In that world, it's the apps that win, in my opinion, not the brands. There is no maintainable moat in that space. You either need to bravely put down the capital and have a destination, or you need to resign yourself to the competitive bloodbath of food delivery. Now, Spur just happens to have the additional clever layer of the play parks for kids, giving parents a trusted experience and a way to just get a break from that classic mom, 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 dad, 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 that we all know and love, at least for a short while. And just because a restaurant has a play park, that doesn't make it an automatic hit with parents. I've been to restaurants where you either can't see where the kids are, or there's no one on duty, or a personal favorite of mine that I saw recently, a play area next to a massive staircase. Only someone who doesn't actually have children could possibly have signed off on that stupidity. And at Spur, because the business is built around families and they've been doing this for a long time, they get it right in terms of having safe play areas with supervision and visibility. Trust sells in this market. Now here's a stat for you from the FY25 results rather than the interims. 38% of their champions segment members of the Spur loyalty program have children. This tells you that parents love it, but perhaps even more incredibly, it tells you that plenty of adults are also happy to go to Spur for reasons unrelated to the kiddies menu and the arcade games. And as a final point around experiences, sit-down customers contributed 87% of group turnover in FY25. Mr. D and Uber Eats, 6.5% in total. The remaining 6.7 or so was a hybrid model of people collecting from the restaurants. Now, in the interim report, what they've done is they've actually combined Mr. D, Uber Eats, and the collections in one category designed to capture consumption off-premises. But the percentages still look pretty consistent versus FY25. Insight number 6 is that breakfast is not where the money is. In the interim period, breakfast was 11% of Spurs' turnover, lunch 51%, while dinner was good for 38%, almost perfectly in line with the FY25 contributions. Of course, this is a group view. Different restaurant chains have different strategies. Hussar Grill, for example, is very good at dinner, while Doppio Zero is strongest at lunchtime. Now, this doesn't mean that the chains don't use specials to try and attract more customers at traditionally quiet times. In the last annual results, Spur gave the example of Hussar Grill's lunch special, appealing to value-seeking customers at a time of day when the restaurant is not full anyway. This shows one of the strategies in getting these restaurants to perform even better. Aside from where they are obviously very strong, if they can run specials to bring customers in at a quieter time of day, that can do wonders for return on investment. What does this all mean for the future? What does Spur need to do next? Well, more of the same, really. They just need to keep executing to high standards, allocating capital properly, and avoiding all temptation to do silly deals. They also ideally need a resolution to the GPS Foods litigation, an overhang on the share price that would be a nasty shock to the numbers if it crystallizes. I do worry a little bit about the approach they've taken here at Spur of not raising a liability at all for this, even though the claimant has made some positive progress with the arbitration. Spur's market cap is 3.7 billion rand and the claim is for over 230 million rand. Now, these claims are almost never settled at the full amount, so the likely exposure, if any, is much smaller than that. And even if the worst happens, it wouldn't sink the place, but it would leave a bad taste in the mouth of investors. A little bit like that Milky Lane waffle that even my kids didn't really want to eat. Which is why the next time, I took them to Spur. There's no such thing as an opportunity without risk, and these are merely my opinions on the stocks covered herein. Make sure that you do your own research, form your own views on the market when doing anything in your portfolio. Nothing in supernatural stocks should be taken as advice.